With that, we bring in Mark Zumoff. Mark, welcome. Great to have you with us. Thank you so much. You haven't done a lot of these, and we appreciate the fact that you decided to join us.
Steve Jones, anything for you and your producer, Matt Cotrillo.
Well, appreciate it very much. Obviously, one of the questions is going to be, you make the decision to retire, but it's not one of those, hey, the season's over, I'm retiring. When did you really start contemplating that, you know what, I think this is the time to step away? When did that start to ruminate in the mind?
It's a good question, and I would say this. As I went through my career, and there's no exact date or exact time, but I began to think as I went along, you know, it would be nice to step away before people thought I should step away, to be able to leave when I could still do it, when people thought that I had some viability and some ability, and not when I had passed that point and maybe started to misidentify players or misspeak or make mistakes or not look so good on the air or anything like that. I signed my last contract 3 years ago, and that's when I think that the wind speed kind of picked up. And I would say 2 years ago, I pretty much made up my mind. And then, it really took the last year to do all the planning, to speak with my bosses at NBC and the Sixers and all that sort of thing. And I will say this, there are certainly some things I'm going to miss. Live performing, and you know all that too well, being one of them, there's nothing like it. And of course, all the people that I worked with, and the fact that I had achieved a dream. But I think that, as I said in my essay that was published online, I'm clearly well into the fourth quarter of my life, and frankly, I want to be able to do some other things that are not necessarily related to sports or broadcasting. So I'm pretty comfortable with it, but I will say this, and I know you live a similar life doing football and basketball, that when the leaves start to turn and the weather starts to chill, I might have a few pangs, but all in all, I'm very comfortable with the decision.
Yeah, it's interesting because everybody has their own way of getting to this point. I'll give you one. Myron Cope. Joe Gordon was the publicity director for the Steelers, and he had a private agreement with Joe Gordon, who was the publicity director. He said, look, if I start to sound as if I shouldn't be there, tell me and I'll quit. One day after a season, Joe Gordon went to Myron's house and he said, you know what? It's time. And Myron said, okay. He retired the next day because he knew he had a trusted independent voice. Did you ever have a trusted independent voice that would talk to you about such things, or was it something you had to really trust your own gut with?
Yes and yes. So I would say my producer, J.R. Aquila, my boss, the vice president of live events at NBC Sports Philly, Sean Oleksiak, I knew that they would tell me the truth, and it was like half kidding, half serious. Please tell me when I start to slip. I'd like to think that I hadn't gotten to that point yet, but those two guys, and of course, my wife, who, as you know, wives can be painfully objective sometimes, but you need to hear that. Yes. I would say that all three of them were people who I'd said that to, but I'd like to think that I did not get to that point, that I retired where I still had something left to give. And I'll tell you what, I don't know what your personal plan is, but I think for me, it was the right decision. Look at Marv Albert. He went until he was 80. So my only fear is that if I go to 80, you know, what will I be able to do in terms of travel and other things where I'll still have the energy and I'll still have the physical ability and mental capacity to do it? So I'm not going to second guess Marv Long. What a tremendous career, the greatest announcer in the history of my sport, but his game plan was not for me, and my game plan may or may not be for you.
Right. No, it's everybody has to have their own plan as to when they're comfortable. I just admire the fact that you're comfortable doing this, because I can assure you, pro to pro, there's a lot more left in the tank. I thought you had a great season. So,
You're kind, and I don't know what Penn State sports, quite frankly, would be without you. So, at some point, yes, Father Time catches up with all of us. But if you're of the mind, Steve, and you certainly sound awesome because I tune in a great deal, keep on keeping on.
What was it like when you had to tell Ala about this?
That's a really good question. So Ala lives in North Jersey, and I just thought it important to go to his house and be face-to-face with him. And there was a blank stare for maybe 3 or 4 seconds, because Ala's not one who's gets blown away by news. He's seen a lot in his time, but there was that blank stare for just a few seconds, and then conversation sort of continued, and then there was a lot of it. I'm really going to miss you, and I would say the same thing to him. We had a what I would like to think is a tremendous vibe, and as you know, when you're on the air with someone who you genuinely like, and they like you, and there's a good feel, and it almost feels like just a couple of guys watching a game, and you're just taking care of the nuts and bolts to make sure you get the receiver and the tackler right. It's a great feeling. So, as I said earlier, there are people that I'm going to miss, and he is certainly going to be one of them for sure.
Yeah, and I understand where you're coming from, because I have that with both Jack Ham and Dick Girardi. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
There you go. There you go.
When someone makes a Hall of Fame speech, you normally don't hear the announcer of the team singled out. Allen Iverson did that, and specifically talked about you because you were the soundtrack of his career. What did that moment mean to you?
I was actually there in the audience, and it blew me away, to be quite honest with you, because I knew that Allen was the type of guy to thank a lot of people. And believe me, he went way over his allocated amount of time. So maybe I shouldn't be too surprised that I was thrown into that mix, but you're right. It's not something that happens all the time, if ever. And all I could say to Allen when I finally saw him to be able to thank him was, I need to thank you because you gave me great material. I mean, think about it. Just the uniqueness of who he was as a person, as a player, as an icon, as a guy who really kind of defined his own era where athletics and entertainment came together. He was awesome. So my gratitude to him, as well as any gratitude he felt he had for me, because he was a spectacular player, to say the least.
What did it mean to you to go through the process and to see the Sixers come out of the process as a major contender?
I have to say that I see both sides of the process. On the one hand, there is the, we'll call it moral responsibility. I don't know if that's the right word, to try to win. It was clear that Sam Hinkie had a longer-term goal in mind and was willing to accept losses for a particular period of time. When I think about the process, I think about a quote that someone once gave me who said that Sam Hinkie, whether or not you agree with what he was doing, was lawyering up the situation, meaning that attorneys will oftentimes, on behalf of their clients, do whatever is necessary in order to defend their client or make their client's case. So in this case, he did what he did because he could. Whether or not it involved winning was a side issue. So the fact that they were successful, well, people will debate whether or not it is a success. Some have already proclaimed it a failure based on what happened in this year's playoffs. But I have always been a proponent of building through the draft, because then if you know what you're doing in that regard, you get young players who are good, and then they can be good for a long time together. So, and I'm a Sixers fan. I'm glad they're winning. I'm not happy with the way that they unceremoniously left the playoffs once again. But I still think the process is very much alive. Certainly, if you still have Embiid and Simmons on the team, it's very much alive.
All right. This is something you haven't had to do since early March of 2020, but the NBA brings with it a lot of travel. People think I travel a lot. How much I travel is a fraction of what you've had to travel. Was travel enjoyable to you, or in the end, did the travel and the number of trips you had to make get to you?
Yes and yes. It was enjoyable, but there were times where it became arduous, and I'll be honest with you, while I did miss my wife and my family and my own bed, I would slap myself and say, come on, you're the voice of an NBA team, you've achieved your dream, you travel on a charter, you stay at five-star hotels, your travel arrangements are fixed up for you, there's nothing you really have to do in that regard. So it was a double-edged sword. It's a great question, and I will say I value the fact that I could go around the league, that I could interact with my colleagues, that there was always, and you'll understand this, Steve, there's faces that you see every year when you go to Michigan or whatever the venue happens to be. There were even if it was a security guard or someone who greeted you at the press gate. Mm-hmm. It was there were always these people who you saw all the time, and they were almost like friends of yours. So that part I loved, and of course, you know, when you had a day off, you got a chance to do some sightseeing or whatever. But it started to get old, certainly towards the end, and quite frankly, that was one of the silver linings of the pandemic, was the fact that we did the road games remotely. I did the games off a monitor, and instead of going from Portland to Phoenix in the middle of the night, I was home in bed.
So, obviously now, you're in this spot. So, can you give some hints as to one or two things you'd at least initially like to do where you get more out of your life?
I think the first thing I'm obligated to do is return a lot of emails, voicemails, texts, tweets. I just, and I have to tell you, I at the risk of blowing my own horn, I have been awestruck by the kind of reaction that's been out there. And I think a lot of it just had to do with the fact that, you know, I'm a kid from Northeast Philly. I've always tried to stay grounded and just do my job to the best of my ability. And when I felt my ego bubbling up because I would hear some praise from somewhere, I would try to deflect it. And then when it came time to retire, my confidants would say to me, wait till you see what happens. And I kind of refused to believe it. So I that's what I have to do. I have to answer a lot of those comments and calls from people. And then I have the second edition of a sportscasting textbook I'm finishing up. I'd like to do a little bit of teaching. Believe it or not, my name does mean a little something in the Philadelphia market, so perhaps there's a promotional or marketing opportunity for me. I'd have to explore that. And then just do what I said, whether it's traveling with my wife and spending time with her, taking up a musical instrument, trying to speak a foreign language, get better in the kitchen. Just things that are totally unrelated to what I've been doing for the last, we'll call it, 39 years, I'm open to.
I will tell everyone out there, and I think I mentioned it when you were on the show the last time, that he guest lectured on Zoom to my class in the fall. And to a person, they said it was the best lesson they had the entire time. And so the ability of him to teach this is going to be something that's going to be invaluable for young people. It really will be, Mark.
You're very kind to say that. You're actually giving me chills because I am fond of, there is a physicist he's not alive anymore. He was more prominent in the 50s and 60s, a guy by the name of Richard Feynman. He's got a Twitter account with like 500,000 followers, and basically it's his thoughts and philosophies that are tweeted out on an occasional basis. And one of the things that he said, which I held on to, Steve, it's when one teaches to learn. So from that aspect of it, the process of teaching gets me excited because I have an opportunity to learn. Sometimes when you just hear your own thoughts, it's like, oh yeah, you know what? That makes sense. I forgot about that. Or, geez, it's not something that I actually consciously thought of, but that's an interesting thing. And in addition to that, and you can attest to this, I'm sure, because media is converging and changing so quickly before our eyes, the kids that you teach and I teach can easily teach us because their entire lives have been social media, have been digital, have been computer, have been automation, have been technology and internet. They don't know what it was like to have to wait for the next day's newspaper to see if your favorite team won. So there's plenty for us to learn from the younger people as well as we teaching them.
Well, I know it's something that I talk about with my students. I said there are two major tests of character in anything, but including this business. How are you in the lowest of lows, and how are you in the highest of highs? Are you the same person the entire time? Mark, you've been the same person the entire time. So I congratulate you on the kind of career that many people should emulate.
You're very kind, and you have to do one thing for me, is have me back to speak to your class.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, that's an automatic. That's an automatic. We'll do that in the fall at some point because they're gonna love that.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Mark, thank you so much, and thank you for enriching our profession. Appreciate you very much.
Back at you. When it's finally time for you, Steve, you're going to see it's going to be a life well lived, I guarantee you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. We will talk shortly about the fall.
Great.